Welcome to Football Army.
We just survived an absolute marathon of holiday football from the Thanksgiving triple header all the way through the first ever Black Friday game.
It was an incredible slate. And now we pivot right into the chaos of college rivalry week.
It never stops. So today we're going to break down all the fallout from those massive games and then look ahead to what might be the most dangerous Iron Bowl in years.
It was a Thanksgiving that really reshaped the league. Just to set the table, we saw the Packers go into Detroit and beat the Lions 31-24.
Huge divisional game.
Then the Cowboys, in a really emotional game, managed to hold off the Chiefs 31-28.
The reigning champs, no less.
Exactly. And to cap it all off, Joe Burrow comes back, and the Bengals just stun the Baltimore Ravens 32-14.
And just like that, the NFC playoff picture gets a whole lot tighter. That Packers win especially changes the entire dynamic in the NFC North.
Oh, for sure. Before we jump into that first game, you really have to look at that division now. The Bears are sitting at 8-3, but right behind them were the Packers at 8-3-1, and now the Lions have slid all the way back to 7-5.
The margin for error is just gone. It's zero.
It's completely gone.
Yeah.
And that season sweep the Packers just pulled off against Detroit. That's basically like having a two-game lead because of the tiebreakers. That's the stuff that wins you a division title in December.
Okay, let's start there then. Game one on Thanksgiving, Green Bay 31, Detroit 24. This result feels, I don't know, almost tectonic for that division.
It really is. Completing that regular season sweep is just massive. It's the first time they've done it since 2020.
And for a young team like Green Bay, that kind of road win in that environment, it builds a ton of confidence.
It does. And the way they won was defined by a clear philosophy from the head coach. It was all about aggression.
Matt LaFleur, right? He basically came out and said it afterward.
He's totally transparent. His quote was that the game came down to fourth down and that he'd rather go down swinging. That wasn't just talk either. That mindset shaped the entire game.
I love that quote. It gives the team an identity, and they proved it on the field, didn't they? They went for it right away.
Right out of the gate. That fourth and three early in the game. Instead of kicking a field goal, they go for it.
And it pays off big time. A 22-yard touchdown pass to Dontavian Wicks, the rookie.
Exactly. That's not just a conversion. That's a seven-point swing. You go from a potential 3 points to a definite seven, and you send a message to the other sideline.
That you're not going to play scared.
Not at all. And they kept doing it. Later on, they had a fourth and one, and what do they do?
Another touchdown. To Romeo Doubs, I think. Made it 17-7.
That's the one. When you hit on those plays, it's just demoralizing for a defense. They feel like they did their job, they got the stop on third down, and they still can't get off the field.
But the real dagger, the moment that showed ultimate confidence, came late in the fourth quarter.
Oh, yeah. The game-sealing one.
Green Bay is up by seven, just trying to run out the clock. They face another fourth and three. Most coaches in the league are punting there.
100%. You punt the ball, pin them deep, and you trust your defense to get one final stop.
Not LaFleur. He put the ball right back in Jordan Love's hands.
Which is the ultimate vote of confidence for your young quarterback.
Mm.
And Love delivered. He finds Wicks again.
For a 16-yard gain that just completely ices the game.
And the craziest part of that play, if you watch the replay, is that Wicks literally lost his shoe mid-route.
No way.
Yeah, he stumbles, his shoe flies off, but he somehow keeps his balance, secures the catch, and gets the first down. Just an incredible effort.
And that caps off a career day for him. 94 yards and two touchdowns for an undrafted rookie on Thanksgiving. That's a huge story.
That whole young receiving core is growing up fast. But this game was also about Jordan Love taking that next step. He had a monster day.
Four touchdowns, and I saw a stat that really put his performance in historical context for the Packers.
It was a big one. He became the first Packers quarterback to throw for four or more touchdowns on Thanksgiving, with a passer rating over 120 since. Wait for it. Bart Starr in 1966.
Wow, that's nearly 60 years.
To 59 years. When you're putting your name next to Bart Starr in the Packers history books, you're doing something right. He just looks so poised, so in control.
It really does feel like they've found their guy again.
It's starting to look that way.
Right.
But, you know, wasn't all good news for Green Bay. The win came at a pretty significant cost.
The injury to Devontae Wyatt.
Yeah, their big defensive lineman. He went down late with a what looked like a serious ankle injury.
And LaFleur called it a critical loss after the game, which is never what you want to hear.
No. Wyatt is their key guy in the middle for stopping the run. If he's out for any extended period of time, that fundamentally changes what they can do on defense, especially with some run-heavy teams coming up on the schedule.
So while Green Bay's offense is celebrating, Their defense might have a huge problem.
A huge hole to fill.
And speaking of defense, we have to talk about the guy who completely wrecked the game for the Lions offense, Micah Parsons.
An absolute game wrecker. And you have to remember the price Green Bay paid to get him. It was a king's ransom.
Two first-round picks plus Kenny Clark, right. And then they gave him that massive contract.
$188 million. That's the kind of investment you make for a player you believe is a true cornerstone, a generational talent.
And against the Lions, he looked every bit the part. What was his final stat line? It was insane.
It was. 2.5 sacks, 8 tackles, 4 quarterback hits, and 10 total pressures on Jared Goff. He was just living in the backfield.
That is complete and utter dominance. And those sacks pushed him past a pretty significant historical marker.
It did. He's now at 12.5 sacks for the season. And that makes him the first player in the history of the NFL to record at least 12 sacks in each of his first 5 seasons.
The first ever. That's incredible. I know he was tied with Reggie White for a similar record.
Right. They both had started their careers with 5 straight seasons of double-digit sacks. But Parsons just took it a step further, hitting 12 in all 5 of those years. Nobody's ever done that.
So when you pay a guy almost $200 million, you're paying for that kind of history.
You're paying for him to be an outlier, and he is. But what's maybe even more impressive is his mindset about it.
His quote after the game was perfect.
Yeah, they asked him about the record, and he didn't even pause. He just said, "How can we get to 6? That's the mindset.
I love that. No celebrating, just what's next? How do you get better?
Once you do 6, how do you get to 7? That's the mentality of an all-time great. He's not chasing stats. He's chasing perfection.
And to top it all off, he also tied the NFL record for most career sacks on Thanksgiving Day. He just owns the holiday.
With 8.5. He's basically become a Thanksgiving tradition, just like turkey and stuffing.
All right, so let's flip to the other side of that game. The Detroit Lions. This loss has to be a gut punch for them.
A huge one. They're down to 7-5 now, and Dan Campbell himself said they've dug ourselves a little bit of a hole.
And it's not just the loss, it's how they're losing. Their whole identity seems to be backfiring on them right now.
It really is. I mean, their Thanksgiving record is already abysmal, something like 1-8 in their last 9 games on the holiday.
But the bigger issue is their aggression on fourth down. It used to be their strength, and now...
Now it's a crisis. They failed twice on fourth down against the Packers, and that's become a trend.
What's the stat on that? It's pretty damning, isn't it?
It is. Since week 11... The Lions are now 0-for-7 on fourth down attempts. That is the most tries in the league in that span without a single conversion.
0-for-7. Ouch.
And Campbell said he's going to stick with it, that it's who they are. But at some point, you have to execute. The league has tape on them now. They know it's coming. And the Lions haven't adjusted.
And to make a really bad day even worse, they lost their best offensive player.
Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Yeah.
It's a brutal blow. He goes down with an ankle injury in the first quarter, and he's their engine, leading receiver, leading in yards, touchdowns, everything.
And Campbell's prognosis wasn't great. A week or two, maybe, if we're lucky.
Yeah, and you have to connect that to the fact that they already lost their star tight end, Sam Laporta, for the season.
Right. So you take away Goff's top 2 targets.
And suddenly you're asking a whole lot from Jameson Williams and the rookie running back, Jahmyr Gibbs. It just puts immense pressure on a much smaller group of players to carry the entire offense. They're running out of weapons fast.
All right, let's move to the second game of the day. The Dallas Cowboys taking down the Kansas City Chiefs 31-28, a huge win for Dallas, extending their win streak to 3.
It was a massive statement win. To do it against the defending AFC champs, it shows that this Cowboys team might have a different level of resilience this year.
And it really felt like their offense has found a consistent rhythm lately.
It has. Dak Prescott was excellent again, 2 touchdowns, 320 yards through the air. But you really have to give a ton of credit to the offensive line.
They were fantastic. Kept them clean all day.
0 sacks allowed. And that was against the Chiefs defense that was blitzing like crazy trying to throw them off. The O-line just stoned them.
And that protection allows the other parts of the offense to get going. The run game, for example, is finally looking consistent.
3 straight weeks with over 100 yards on the ground now. They had 137 against the Chiefs, including that big 43-yard touchdown run from Malik Davis.
When they can run the ball like that, it makes everything Dak does in the passing game, especially the play action, so much more dangerous.
And his receivers really stepped up, CeeDee Lamb especially.
Yeah, he had a couple of uncharacteristic drops the week before against Philly, and you wondered how he'd respond?
He responded like a true number one receiver. Seven catches, 112 yards, and a touchdown. Just bounced right back.
And then there's George Pickens on the other side, who's just been a model of consistency all season.
Unbelievable season for him. He had another six catches for 88 yards, but the biggest one was that 13-yard catch on third and two to seal the game.
Just a clutch, chain-moving play when they absolutely needed it.
And he's putting up such huge numbers, over 1,100 yards and eight touchdowns already, that the talk is already starting about his next contract.
The franchise tag, right?
Yep. The non-exclusive tag is projected to be around $28 million. It just shows that Dallas is ready to pay up to keep their stars, both on offense with Pickens and on defense with Parsons.
Speaking of the defense, they made the plays they had to. Holding that Chiefs offense scoreless for a long stretch in the middle of the game was the key.
Forcing four straight punts in the second and third quarters. That's how you beat Patrick Mahomes. And Jadeveon Clowney had a huge game.
Two sacks on Mahomes.
Yeah, and one of those sacks took him something like 11 seconds to finally get there. It just shows you how hard it is to bring Mahomes down, but also how relentless Clowney's motor is.
And the guys they brought in off the deadline are contributing. Quinnen Williams had a bunch of pressures.
He did. Six pressures and four run tackles. He's been a perfect fit. They're getting pressure from multiple spots now, which is exactly what you need in the playoffs.
But this game and this whole win streak, really, it's been about more than just football for the Cowboys.
Yeah.
It's been happening under this cloud of tragedy.
It has. This 3A run started right after the tragic death of their defensive end, Marshawn Nyland.
And the team has clearly rallied together. The halftime show tribute from Post Malone was incredibly powerful.
It was. You could feel the emotion when he shouted, "We love you, 94.
Yeah.
And Dak Prescott talked about it after the game, how they're honoring him, hanging his jersey in the locker room, carrying a number 94 flag on the field. They're playing for something bigger.
It's an incredible story of resilience, and there was another really personal kind of emotional angle to this game for one of the coaches.
For Brian Schottenheimer, yeah. It was his first Thanksgiving win, and it came against the Chiefs, the team his late father, Marty Schottenheimer, famously coached.
And he said he carries his dad's old football card with him for every game.
Just a little reminder of how deep these connections run in the football world. It's more than just a game.
It really is. Okay, let's look at the team that lost that game, the Kansas City Chiefs. Falling to 6-6. This is uncharted territory for them.
Completely. And what's so jarring is that they lost a game where Patrick Mahomes was statistically brilliant.
Four touchdowns, zero interceptions.
Right. And he had never lost a game in his career with that stat line before. He was 12U.
Yeah.
It just proves that the Chiefs' problems run a lot deeper than their quarterback.
Mahomes even said it himself. The quote was something like, "We can beat anybody, but we've shown that we can lose to anybody."
That's a quarterback who is deeply frustrated with his team's inconsistency. He pointed to missed opportunities, getting the ball at midfield twice to start the second half, and coming away with 0 points. That's losing football.
And now the playoff picture looks genuinely scary for them.
It does. Their chances drop from 63% down to 47% with this loss. Mahomes said it grimly. "You've got to win every game now and hope that's enough."
Yeah.
Their margin for error is gone.
And just when you think it can't get any worse, you look at their injury report.
It's a catastrophe on the offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
They came into the game without their starting right guard, Trey Smith.
Okay, that's one starter.
Then, during the game, they lose their right tackle, Juwan Taylor, to an elbow injury.
That's two.
And then, the biggest blow of all, their rookie left tackle, Josh Simmons, goes down with a dislocated and fractured wrist. He's done for a long, long time.
So that's three starting offensive linemen down. For a team that relies on Mahomes extending plays, that is a potential death blow to their season.
It's an absolute crisis. Even a magician like Mahomes can't operate if the pocket is collapsing from three different spots on every single play. The pressure is now immense on a group of backups to somehow hold it together.
Unbelievable. Let's get to the Thanksgiving nightcap. The Cincinnati Bengals stunning the Baltimore Ravens 32-14. And the headline here is pretty simple, isn't it?
It is. Joe Burrow is back.
And he looked like he hadn't missed a beat.
Not at all. He comes back after missing 9 games with that toe injury and just looks completely comfortable. 261 yards, 2 touchdowns, 0 picks.
The numbers with him versus without him are just staggering.
It's night and day. They're 3-0 when he plays, and they were 1-8 without him. He is the franchise.
And they didn't ease him back in either. They came out throwing the ball all over the yard.
They trusted him immediately. He threw the ball 40 times in the first 3 quarters alone. That's a statement of intent. They were going to be timid.
But as good as Burrow was, this game was won because of how poorly the Ravens played.
Oh, without a doubt. Baltimore just could not hold on to the football. A season high 5 turnovers.
5? That's almost impossible to win with.
4 fumbles and an interception. And Lamar Jackson was responsible for 3 of them himself. It's a shocking lack of ball security from a team that was on a 5-game win streak.
And there was one turnover, one specific fumble that completely changed the entire game.
The Isaiah Likely fumble. It was one of the biggest momentum swings you will ever see.
Set the scene. He catches a pass. He's rumbling down the field.
It's a 44-yard play. He's heading for the end zone, about to give the Ravens an 8-point lead. It looks like a done deal.
And then the Bengals safety Jordan Battle just makes a perfect play.
A perfect punch. Knocks the ball out right at the goal line just before Likely crosses the plane.
So instead of a Baltimore touchdown,
the ball rolls through the end zone. It's a touchback. Bengals ball. It was a potential 14-point swing on a single play. Absolutely devastating for Baltimore.
And you have to credit that Bengals defense. They've been ranked near the bottom of the league all year, but they stepped up big time.
They did. They forced the turnovers and they capitalized. A defensive end, Cedric Johnson, recovered 2 fumbles himself. They held a really good Ravens offense to just 14 points.
Now, in that game, we also saw a bit of history from the Ravens running back, Derrick Henry.
We did. He passed the legendary Jim Brown to move into 11th on the all-time rushing list. An incredible accomplishment.
And he joined LaDainian Tomlinson in a pretty exclusive club, too.
The only 2 players ever with 10 or more rushing touchdowns in 8 or more straight seasons. Just a model of sustained dominance.
But for all that history, his usage in the game was weird, to say the least.
It was very strange. In the first quarter, he was gashing them. 5 carries, 33 yards, a touchdown. He looked great.
And then in the second quarter,
he got 0 carries, not 1.
How does that even happen? Your quarterback is struggling with turnovers, your Hall of Fame running back is playing well, and you just stop giving him the ball.
It makes no sense. It speaks to a real identity crisis on offense for Baltimore. They get so focused on trying to make the passing game work that they abandon what's actually working on the ground. It's a major flaw.
And while we're talking about the Ravens, they had a key injury in that game as well, cornerback Nate Wiggins.
Yeah, he went out with a foot injury. The good news is Coach Harbaugh said it's not serious long term.
But his status for their next game against the Steelers is up in the air, right?
It is. And losing a starting corner for a must-win divisional game against a rival is it's not ideal.
Not at all. Let's stay in the AFC for one more piece of major news. This one's out of Indianapolis, and it could shake up the whole conference.
Yeah, this is a big one. Colts quarterback Daniel Jones, who has been having an incredible career best season,
leading the Colts to an 8-3 record, top of the AFC South.
He's dealing with a fractured fibula.
A fracture. And he's saying he's going to play through it.
He is. He insists he'll be out there for week 14 against the Texans, but you have to be hugely skeptical about that.
I mean, a fracture in your leg, that's got to affect his mobility, his ability to plant and throw. We saw that at the end of their last game.
We did. He was clearly hampered. He only completed 3 of 8 passes in the fourth quarter. For a team that's been leading the league in scoring, any drop-off from your quarterback is potentially devastating.
Okay, let's turn our attention to the Black Friday game. A massive NFC showdown between 2 8-3 teams, the Chicago Bears and the Philadelphia Eagles.
The stakes here are just enormous. The winner gets a huge leg up in their divisional race and in the overall NFC playoff picture.
And the Eagles are coming into this game in a really weird spot mentally.
Reeling is the word. They had that historic collapse, as it's being called, against Dallas last week, blew a 21-0 lead. That's the kind of loss that can linger.
The good news for them seems to be on the injury front, at least for their skill players.
Right. Devonta Smith and Saquon Barkley are both expected to play, which is huge. Smith is their leading receiver. You need him out there.
But the bad news is on the offensive line.
A critical absence. The all-pro tackle Lane Johnson is out with a foot injury.
And when you take an elite protector like him out of the lineup and you combine it with the weather forecast.
High winds at Lincoln Financial Field. We've seen that movie before. It completely neutralized Jalen Hurts against the Lions a few weeks ago. He couldn't throw the ball effectively at all.
So if the wind is howling again, they're going to have to rely on their run game.
And that's where the problem is.
Yeah.
Their run game hasn't been good. He was ranked 21st in the league. It's been a huge point of criticism.
And Nick Foles, of all people, weighed in on it this week.
He did. And he was pretty direct. He basically called out their offensive coordinator for a lack of creativity and predictability,
saying they're too reliant on certain formations, they don't use play action enough, and they call the same run plays over and over in the second half.
Exactly. He pointed out that for all the talent they have, they rank 24th in total offense. That's a damning indictment.
And on the other side, you have the Bears, who are coming in red hot.
A four-game winning streak. They're playing with a ton of confidence. And their quarterback, Caleb Williams, is chasing a big franchise milestone.
The 4,000-yard mark.
Yep. He needs to average just under 240 yards a game the rest of the way to get there. It just shows the kind of high-powered passing attack they've become.
And they're getting healthy at the right time. Their two best cornerbacks are coming back.
Jalen Johnson and Kyler Gordon. That is a massive boost for their defense, especially when you're about to face a receiver duo like Smith and A.J. Brown. Johnson, in particular, is one of the best cover corners in the game.
All right, let's leave the NFL for a bit and dive into the pure, beautiful chaos of college football's rivalry week. And we have to start with the Iron Bowl.
The Iron Bowl, Auburn at 5-6, hosting number 10 Alabama at 9-2. And the stakes are just completely different for each team.
For Auburn, it's simple. Win and you go to a bowl game. A huge accomplishment for Hugh Freeze in his first year.
And for Alabama, it's also simple. Lose, and any tiny remote chance you had of making the college football playoff is completely, utterly gone.
On paper, this looks like an easy Alabama win. They've won the last five Iron Bowls.
And there's that one stat that everyone points to.
Yeah.
A top 10 ranked Alabama team has never, ever lost to an unranked Auburn team at Jordan-Hare Stadium.
Never. That seems pretty definitive.
It seems that way.
Yeah.
But this is where you have to look past the stats and embrace the famous voodoo of Jordan-Hare.
The chaos factor.
Exactly. Because while that never lost stat is true, you look at the last two times Bama won there. They were nail biters.
How close were they?
They won by a combined 5 points total. Against two Auburn teams that were pretty mediocre, finished 6-7. So, they don't lose there, but they also don't blow them out. Strange things just tend to happen in that stadium.
And you look at Auburn's offense right now, and they look like a different team since their coaching change.
A completely different team. Since they fired Hugh Freeze as the play caller, they've been playing faster, more exciting football with Ashton Daniels at quarterback.
And their star receiver, Cam Coleman, has been unleashed.
He had a monster game against Vanderbilt. This is not the same plotting Auburn offense we saw earlier in the year. They're going to try and use tempo to put Alabama's defense on its heels.
And on the Alabama side, there are some real concerns about their quarterback, Ty Simpson.
There are. He's been in a bit of a slump. Really uncharacteristic mistakes, turning the ball over. He had a pick and a fumble against Oklahoma, then threw two more interceptions last week against Eastern Illinois.
And if you're turning the ball over against Eastern Illinois,
yeah, you're in big trouble against your arch rival in their stadium with their fans going crazy. Auburn is going to smell blood in the water and come after him.
So if Simpson struggles, Alabama will need to lean on its defense.
They will. And their run defense has been much better in the second half of the season. They might have to win this game for them, create a few turnovers of their own, and just grind out a low-scoring win.
And that's why, even though Alabama's a six-point favorite, you're hearing so much upset buzz from analysts this week.
The chaos is calling to them. They see an Auburn team playing loose and fast with nothing to lose, and an Alabama team that has looked vulnerable and is facing immense pressure.
We've even seen some specific score predictions floating around calling for the upset.
Oh yeah, Auburn 24-21, Auburn 29-27. People are genuinely picking the upset, which is rare in this rivalry when the talent gap is this big.
Yeah.
It all comes down to one question. Does history prevail or does chaos reign on the plains?
And we can't wrap up rivalry week without at least touching on the other massive game. Number one, Ohio State at number 15, Michigan.
The game. And this one, unlike the Iron Bowl, has a pretty strong consensus. Most people expect Ohio State to win, and win pretty comfortably.
Because of their defense, mostly.
Their defense is elite, and Michigan's offense has just been inconsistent all year long. The predictions are all in that 21-17 to 35-17 range for Ohio State.
Michigan is trying to win their fifth straight in the series, but it feels like the talent gap is just too much this year.
It does. A win for Ohio State here probably solidifies their spot in the playoff. And just quickly, in the SEC, you've got number 3, Texas A&M, favored over number 16, Texas. And number 4, Georgia, is expected to handle Georgia Tech.
So the top teams are expected to hold serve, setting up some massive conference championship games next week.
Assuming they can avoid the rivalry week chaos, of course.
Which is never a guarantee. Okay, that was an incredible amount of football to unpack. We saw Parsons make history for the Packers. Burrow's return completely changed the Bengals' fortunes, and the Cowboys gut out an emotional win over the Chiefs.
And if there's one major takeaway for you listening, it's how tight all these divisional races have become. The NFC North is now a total dogfight between three teams. The Packers sweeping the Lions might end up being the single most important outcome of the entire season for that division.
It's true. The margin for error is gone everywhere. And that brings me back to the biggest question mark in the entire AFC right now.
The Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah. We watched the most dominant force in the conference fall to 6-6. We heard Patrick Mahomes basically say they have to win out and pray that it's enough to even make the playoffs.
And then you layer on top of that the catastrophic injuries they just suffered on their offensive line. They are down three starters, including a long-term injury to their left tackle.
So here's the thought I want to leave you with. Given how bad those injuries are, and given the inconsistency we've seen from them all year, do you really believe Patrick Mahomes can overcome all of that? Can he drag this team through a must-win schedule into the postseason, or has the magic and their margin for error finally run out?